To support Book Reviews Kill, please click on the Patreon link in the description of this episode.
Welcome to Book Reviews Kill, a podcast about fantasy, science fiction, and horror novels. I'm Evan.
And I'm Chad.
And today we are talking about Jade City. We have finished the first book in the Greenbone saga. What a ride. It was so good.
So good.
And I was reading Empire of the Vampire the last like 4 days, and I just crushed the whole book basically. And so I hadn't been reading Jade City. So I read pretty much all from where we left off like today. I just did it all today. So I'm ready for this.
You've been marinating.
Yeah.
Slow cooking in that. Nice work.
So many things have happened.
Yeah.
Things that I just really, really wasn't expecting. The characters are growing in such a way where right when I think I've got one pegged, there's this whole kind of like deeper layer to their mindset. And I'm like watching them grow in real time. Like Hilo is a way different character at the end of this book than he was at the beginning.
Absolutely.
And then just watching that while all this other stuff is going on. There's so many things that it's just, I almost like couldn't keep up with just how everything is escalating.
Yeah. And after reading this book on leadership that I read, Primal Leadership, it's like, this is also a good book for someone who's trying to be a leader, because you learn a lot from Lan and Hilo's journey becoming leaders.
And Shay.
And Shay, yeah.
Like I said in the last episode, there's all these kind of supporting characters and stuff, and they can be kind of one-dimensional because they just need to be a certain way. But the Call family is so dynamic. They're all so different from each other. I'm so excited to just like burn through the next couple of these books. And I think depending on both of our schedules, we might not even do like a weekly episode. We might churn and burn these ones.
Do a couple.
Because I don't think I'll be able to resist. I think I like I really am gonna have to just like keep reading on
with
the second one. If there, I mean, you know, maybe it takes a huge dive in quality, but I don't think it's going to.
I don't think so either. And we are in good hands with Fonda Lee. Let's hit that synopsis.
Yeah, let's do it. Shay discovers that one of Hilo's fingers has been spying on her from the apartment next door. Hilo and Shay argue, and Hilo tells Shay she has no choice but to be watched while on the continent. Anden delivers a parcel to Lan in secret. The two train together, and Lan is rougher than usual, telling Anden he needs to be ready for the war against the Mountain Clan. Anden discovers that Lan has been using SN1. Barrow is instructed by the goateed Greenbone from the Mountain Clan to shoot up the Lilac Divine, a spot Lan frequents. He and his friend are told they will be taken seriously by the clan if they can pull off this show of force. Shay and Anden meet and have dinner. Anden debates telling Shay about the SN1 Lan has been taking, but decides against it. Lan and Hilo agree to deal with Doru after confirming their suspicions of his treachery. Lan elevates Woon to Weatherman, but wishes the man had more time to acclimate to the position. He visits the Lilac Divine, and after taking a moment to himself, doses himself with SN1 after adorning his jade once more. Barrow and Cheeky stand outside the Lilac Divine, ready to shoot the place up, when Lan walks out the front door. Thinking this is a major opportunity, Barrow changes the plan and decides to follow Lan. Lan realizes the boys are trying to kill him and attacks. He kills Cheeky, but Barrow squeezes off a few shots before escaping. Alone, Lan realizes he took a full dose of SN1 instead of a half dose, and falls into the river. Shay receives a call from Hilo, informing her that Lan is dead. On her way to the Call estate, Shay stops at the bank to take her jade out of a safe deposit box. After years without, she promptly adorns her jade. Hilo is beside himself with anger, hell-bent on killing everyone in the Mountain Clan. Shay calms him down and they devise a plan. They send a group of fingers and fists to the Silver Spur as a diversion, then sack 3 casinos in a mountain-held territory, killing 21 Greenbones in retaliation for Lan's death. Gaunt declares open war on No Peak, saying Jade goes to anyone that kills a member of the No Peak clan. Hilo promotes Shay to Weatherman, a job she's been training for off and on her whole life. Shay accepts, knowing she's perfect for the role. Barrow returns to Mutt, thinking he'll be rewarded, but Mutt sends him down a secret passage, trying to smuggle the boy out of the city. After Lan's funeral, Shay visits Doru, now under house arrest, and makes a deal with him. She'll ask Hilo to spare his life if Doru agrees to taking walks and playing chess with Kal Sen to maintain what little sanity the old man has left. The Mountain Clan takes control of the Twice Lucky, and Mr. Un, the owner, swears allegiance to the clan. Shay signs on Woon as her chief of staff. Losing ground to the Mountain Clan, Hilo struggles with his new role as Pillar of No Peak. He asks Shay to find a position for his fiancée, and she agrees after demanding he take up his responsibility and contact the Royal Council. Tem Ben, a jade smuggler, is roughed up by one of the Make brothers. Tar puts a tape recorder down and gets information out of Tem Ben about the Mountain's involvement in illegal jade trafficking. All right, so Lan is dead.
Oh my goodness.
I was like reading for like 150 pages, just thinking he's going to bust out of his coffin or, you know, because it was such a, it switched to it like an interlude there.
Yeah. And you're like, okay, maybe he swims off.
When I thought maybe the SN1 kind of worked in his favor, even though he did take too much.
Put him in like a coma.
In my head, it was too early. Like, we're killing, it kind of felt like, you know, and spoiler for some of the most popular books and TV show ever made, but it kind of felt like Eddard Stark a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And Lan, kind of, upon further reflection, kind of reminded me of Eddard a little bit.
Yeah.
His honor.
He's the rock.
He's so committed to doing the right thing that it's like his downfall. Lan is so focused on being this strong man and seeing his family through this. You know, it's not the exact same situation as Eddard, but it's similar enough that it's like, damn.
Yeah.
Like, that shouldn't have happened, but it makes sense.
It hurts your heart. He plays very similarly to Eddard Stark, the same dependable character. When Lan is around, you know you're in good hands. Nobody's going to fly off the handle emotionally and do something stupid. Everything's going to be well thought out, logically executed. And then he dies.
He messes up.
Yeah, and the whole story kind of goes into chaos. You're like, ooh, there's no hook to hang my hat upon anymore.
No, and I really felt like the rug was pulled out from under me because everything had already been escalating, but it was all this kind of contained situation, right? Like, it's like you knew it was going to bubble over, but you also knew that, like, Lan wasn't going to let it get super out of control. So props to Fonda Lee for, like, I wouldn't have been able, I really didn't think that was going to happen. Like, honestly, I thought Hilo was going to die.
Yeah, he's easier to kill in the story.
And Hilo kind of ends up being, I guess, kind of the main character almost.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if there is a main character, but if someone asked me who's the main character of this book, I think it's Hilo.
Yeah, it was Lan and he was running along, then he tripped, you know, and then during that interlude, Hilo snagged that torch and just took off with it.
Right. Wow. And Shay coming in like a storm.
Man, yeah.
That scene was so cool. Oh, wait. We both said so cool.
So cool. When she has the driver stop at the bank and she goes to her lockbox, and I just loved that scene. I had like dramatic music playing in my head where she has this moment, she sees it and pulls it out and like has a little bit of
trepidation.
Hesitation, and then puts it on, like resilience and jade energy flows into her and she's just like dun dun dun, like ready to go in there, and man does she ever.
There's like that part right before she starts fighting where she has that kind of internal dialogue and she's like, I hope I didn't forget how to do this, and it's just like, nope, no you didn't, not at
nope.
all.
Flowing around the battlefield and using her jade abilities so effectively, it was well played out.
But, you know, as much of a badass as she is, she's the clear-headed one here. Because Hilo is ready to just pop and just murder everybody, which is understandable. You know, I didn't think it was this totally blown out of proportion. He wasn't overreacting. They, according to him, at least, they murdered his brother.
Right.
They escalated everything so hard. And, you know, she's kind of like, all right, I know. But how about we don't get killed today? And we, like, you know, we can pull off some kind of retaliation, but like, let's just think for a second before we just charge in there. Because it shows that Gaunt was totally ready for it, and Gaunt didn't even know what was going on, but he kind of like was really quickly able to put two and two together, and he's like, oh, they're coming here right now,
right?
So let's get ready. And Shay predicted Gaunt's reaction, and it was just, it was all so good.
That was the beauty of her plan, is it plays into their expectations. They're like, we know Hilo's a hothead. We know exactly what he's going to do. She's like, let's make him believe exactly that, that they're right. The human brain loves to be correct, but we're going to double play him, take this deception layer one level deeper and trick him. And man, that was cool. And just got some really excellent positions, not only land, but some financial ability by getting all the gaming houses.
We start this book off thinking that Hilo is just this hot-headed wild card. You know, then we get a little light shed on his relationship with Wen. We get a little light shed on his relationship with Lan and Anden and Shay. And not only are we seeing Hilo from Hilo's perspective, we're seeing Hilo from everyone else's perspective. So when Shay's talking about how she used to try to always do better than Hilo in school, not only is she developing Shay's character there, she's also developing Hilo's,
right?
Because she describes Hilo's reaction to finding out that Shay had kept a journal of all of her accomplishments, and Hilo was just kind of like, this is dumb, like, why would you do that, like, who cares? And then you get another further reaction from Shay upon Hilo's reaction, you know what I mean? So it's just development after development after development, and we're just getting deeper and more complex with these people, and it doesn't feel forced. It doesn't feel like she's talking at me and like building a character like in a D&D campaign,
right? Or like, oh, that thought was clearly meant to just build the world and flush the world out a little bit.
Yeah, these are real people really living in this world, and it's so fun to see their reactions to things. Like when Lan died, like when Shay got the call that Lan was dead, you know, Shay's reaction made a lot of sense and stuff, but what I was really waiting for was, what is Hilo doing right now? Like, is he like, what is, like, oh my god,
he's getting ready to cut his own tongue so he can go die a warrior's
death.
Oh
my god, I forgot about that.
I know, like, what a tradition, right?
Right, he's like, already did it, we already cut our tongues, we got to do it. We cut our tongues. Wow. It's time to go murder everybody. I don't know what to tell you.
I agree, though. Her ability to write self-introspection and just introspection in general is off the charts and very believable.
It just makes this whole plot so much easier to digest, because there are parts of it that, you know, like, personally, like, in my own reading, like, I'm never, like, a huge fan of, like, we've talked about this before, like, I'm never a huge fan of, like, tactics and, like, political intrigue. Like, I like it. I don't mind reading it, but sometimes when I'm reading it, I'm just kind of like, okay, like, okay. Yeah, I mean, like, yeah, this is interesting, but this is just a whole lot of, because unless you're spelling literally everything out, like, for it to be political intrigue, like, you have to leave a little bit of, like dramatic irony for, like, the reader, you know what I mean? So, like, there's some stuff that I'm not going to be let in on, which will kind of, like, raise the tension a little bit. But in so doing, personally, I feel a little bit, like, either left out or confused, which is the point. But, like, I don't know. Maybe I'm just kind of dumb.
No, I don't think so.
Like, having everything spoon-fed to me.
Me too. I mean, political intrigue, I personally don't find interesting enough for me to put forth the effort required to understand all the depth and the monumental effect that one character's move on the political chess table has.
But you have to pay attention to that kind of stuff, because when those, it's like setting up pieces, you know, so you have to pay attention to the pieces being set up so that when a piece is knocked down, you understand why it's important that that piece was knocked down and the way that it was knocked down and stuff. But just like, no book is perfect, but like, the, you know, this amazing book does, if I did have like a gripe, it'd be kind of like, I do get bogged down in like these kind of like 20 to 30 page chapters, or not chapters, but just these like these little intervals now and then where it's like everyone's sitting around a table just kind of like,
what are we doing?
But that's, it's necessary. It has to happen. Like, there's not really like a, there's not a super interesting way to like kind of catch everybody up on what's going on. You know, I mean, I can't think of, you can't like be fighting and like explaining political intrigue and stuff.
Right.
I mean, but I even this, try it.
I know I'm jumping the gun a little bit, but even in the next section where they meet up with the, in the council,
yeah,
they, the most interesting part happens when the pillar of the Mountain Clan is walking into the room, they like have this little mental battle.
Yeah.
And then it's like everything was decided right then. And then you're like, okay, so why am I even going through the next 10 pages?
I mean, but you can't have an entire book that's just like people running around like fighting, like
murdering,
because there'd be no reason for it, right? Like, yeah. you have to have the crest to that trough. You can't just it can't just be like from the first page to the last page and everywhere in between is just these battles, because if you did that, you need to have weight behind it.
Yeah, you haven't seen Battle Royale though, so
right, yeah, I'm sure. No. You could pull it off, like,
yeah, I mean, but you're right, there's no gravitas unless we understand the character. So before we go into the next summary, I want to ask you a question. What are your thoughts on the Barrow character?
I was just gonna ask you about that.
Really?
Yeah, I thought Barrow was just like this introduction to what was going on. Mm-hmm. I didn't think that Barrow was gonna be he's the real wild card.
Yeah,
and by wild card I don't mean that it's like unpredictable, but like no one else in the story knows that this guy is just like meddling in everything.
He's the linchpin. So right, many major events happen solely because of him, whatever is his motivation, which doesn't really change. He's a pretty simple character, but he causes so many large scale things to happen. He's like the tiny domino that ends up like knocking down the city walls because it hits bigger and bigger and bigger ones as it goes. And he's like that first one, but he's such a reoccurring theme. I love how he's being used, but I'm really curious to see what the hell is going to happen with his character.
And I might be digging maybe just like a little bit too much into this because there's still two books left, but I like, it feels to me like Barrow is kind of this representation of the common folk that are, for one thing, being affected by all of this, right? So it's like you've got these two clans and they're so dead set on taking this power and obliterating the other one's existence that, you know, they're kind of like focused on each other. And meanwhile, you have Lantern Men and other business owners that might not be Lantern Men, and just like the common people that are living in Janloon and by extension on Kikhon, the common people are trying to get ahead as well, right? They're trying to grasp power as well, which is why SN1 is such a popular drug. It's just going to keep gaining in popularity, is because, and I don't know if this is going to start panning out in the rest of the series, I could be totally wrong, but maybe these clans are kind of ignoring the fact that like there's going to be a power shift here. Mm-hmm. Like there's got to be a power shift coming. And I think that maybe the Mountain Clan kind of knows that. And that's why Ait is like kind of trying to get ahead of it and nip it in the bud a little bit and like control this flow of this drug that'll allow everybody. Right. You know, that's why he's this recurring character that keeps putting a hitch in everything. You know, and I think that maybe as the story goes on, it won't just be Barrow. It'll be this whole populace that maybe wants in on this to one degree or another. And I could be 100% wrong about that, but Barrow's just very, very interesting.
So interesting. You're entirely right, I think, in that he's a representation of the common man and also, in my opinion, chaos theory. Just a little bit of, you can plan and plan, but you never know when a little fly is going to come along and mess up the entire thing.
Yeah, because he didn't even kill Lan.
No. And it was for a clear misunderstanding of his goal. Like, obviously, they don't want him. Well, I don't know. It was obvious to me the first time I read the book that I was like, oh, they're not going to be happy that he kills or at least tries to kill Lan and then actually does kill him. Well, kind of.
It's an escalation that neither party was even planning on. You know, like these kinds of wars are so messy. Like, just one little variable can come in and just ruin everything.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really happy that Barrow, just when I think that like maybe he's going to kind of like not be as much of a character, it's just like there's this little 2-page chapter and it's like, oh, this guy is still doing stuff.
So I'm very interested to see how his character progresses, and I'll make some predictions in the next chunk.
All right. Speaking of the next chunk, go ahead and take it away, Chad.
Okay. Shay moves back into her familial home and tells her would-be employer that she must do her duty to her family and regretfully declines the job offer she received. Barrow, sneaking back onto the mainland, discovers that Mutt was hoarding a huge amount of shine in the tunnels under his home. And after meeting his son, they agree to work together for their own aims, Barrow to finally get his hand on some jade, and Mutt to avenge his father's death. The council meet up with both pillars, Hilo and Eikgen, in an attempt to peacefully resolve the conflict. Hilo meets with Chancellor Sung, and though they don't like each other, agree they must cooperate if either wants to remain in power. The council session ends when Hilo, in a controlled fit of rage, accuses Eikgen of stealing jade and then giving it to local street gangs and getting them addicted to shine, which only she controls the distribution of. Eikgen sets up a meeting with Shay at a temple and attempts to subvert her. Shay, disgusted by the emotionless calculations of the Mountain Clan's Pillar, tells her she would never betray her family. Helping Shay with her plans, Wen manages to sneak a bunch of jade to a local island controlled by the Aspenians, who agree to work with them and support the Nopeak clan financially. Shay and Hilo learn that Doru, killing one young Greenbone and injuring another, escapes to the Mountain Clan after being aided by their grandpa. The Mountain Clan is winning the fight, especially now that they possess all of the knowledge of Doru, the ex-weatherman of Nopeak, giving them a major strategical advantage and insights into their inner working, strengths, and weaknesses, but is growing increasingly anxious to end the conflict. As if allowed to continue along its present destructive course, the Mountain Clan will gain victory, but only at a tremendous price. The Mountain Clan offers a deal to Hilo that they will let Hilo die a Greenbone's death with a blade in his hand if he surrenders the clan, and the rest of the clan will become the Mountain Clan. Hilo marries Wen, and Anden graduates with top marks from the academy. He wastes no time in joining Hilo's desperate plan and takes his vows, becoming a full-fledged Greenbone. Anden joins Hilo as he goes to present himself to the Mountain Clan. Hilo's plan comes to fruition in a desperate but amazing fight. Gaunt, though he refuses to fight Hilo himself, fulfills his promise to let him die a Greenbone's death with a blade in his hand. After a stunning performance, Hilo, unable to take on the entire clan himself, is about to be killed, gives a signal to Anden, who with Hilo's help is able to stop the heart of Gaunt, killing him and scattering the rest of the clan. Anden and Hilo both survive, and while not defeated, it will be a long time before the Mountain Clan can threaten the Nopeak the same way. The war, for now, has been won. Anden, recalling the ecstasy he felt while holding all of Hilo's jade, publicly declares that he does not want to be a Greenbone at his graduation, bringing dishonor to the clan and Hilo. Hilo disowns Anden in a fit of rage. Shay receives a letter from Doru warning her to beware of the mountain and always have a backup plan to escape. She, however, remains hopeful that her and Hilo can bring peace back to the clan. The book ends as Barrow steals into the graveyard, a young Mutt in tow, and examining Lon's grave and coveting the jade he knows to be buried within, feels a hope of his own rise within him. Man, I loved the last chapter of that, last couple chapters of that book.
I was not expecting at all any of that to go down.
Yeah.
I thought that I had like missed a chapter there.
Yeah.
Did you feel like that too?
Oh, absolutely. And I felt even on the second read through, I'm like, am I forgetting something? It's Fonda Lee's awesome ability to hold just enough information from you to kind of keep you guessing along with the enemy and then surprise you with them.
Right. And there's this whole plan that Hilo and Anden had. And, you know, you really think like, okay, something is really going on here, because Hilo takes Anden into the training room and just swears him in right there. And they keep, you know, and Shay seems in on it and stuff. And they keep saying like, are you sure you want to do this? Are you sure you want to do this? So I kind of like flipped back a couple pages because I really thought, did I like skip a whole chapter somehow?
Right. What did I miss?
Yeah. But no, it was to keep us on our toes. And, you know, that whole time I was just like, there's like, you know, and then they get up there and to where Gaunt and his cronies are, and Hilo gets out of the car. And I was just sitting there like what is going on? And then, you know, Hilo proceeds to just get his ass kicked. And, you know, right then I was like, okay, I think someone's going to step in here, obviously. But I honestly, at that point, didn't even really think it was going to be Anden. I thought maybe Shay or one of the Make brothers or both of them were going to, or something.
Yeah, she plays it so good, giving you just enough of like closure. You know, Hilo has his last moment with Wen. They make love and you're like, okay, there's kind of a finishing period to that sentence. Like he's going off to die, but also there's a little bit of hope there. Like, no, I'll see you again. And you're like, okay, is he going to sacrifice himself or is he not? Just kind of stringing you along all the way up to the point that he's like on his knees and then gives Anden the signal.
I have a question. I think I know what this is, but what is Wen doing? She kind of goes on like this mission, it seems like. So she goes and talks to the Aspenian like soldiers on that island.
Yeah.
Is she selling jade to them just for money to kind of like float the clan?
Yep. That's the impression that I got. Shade has been tasked with fixing the financial problem. Hilo's trying to fight. And that's how she decides to fix it, was pawning some jade off.
Okay. Yeah, that whole chapter, it was cool, but I was just like, I don't really know exactly what's going on here.
Yeah, there's times I feel like aren't necessary that we're surprised along with the enemy. And that was maybe one of them.
Sure. Yeah. And I like Wen a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I really like that conversation between Wen and Shay.
Yeah, where Shay kind of realizes there's a lot more to her.
Right. Shay's just like, man, I've never really like talked to this woman, and she seems like way more capable than I thought she was initially, you know. And like, I do like the whole thing with the Make family, how they're kind of like, you know, everyone thinks that they're unlucky, and it kind of like, we kind of dig more into why everybody has a bad opinion about them, and Hilo's relationship to the brothers. It was all really good because the Make brothers are like, you know, they're right in the very beginning of this book. And, you know, it's just another good example of how we can always go deeper with these characters.
Mm-hmm.
Just when you think that these are some one-dimensional people and like whatever, nope, there's this whole backstory with them. And now I'm looking at these brothers differently. And now I'm looking at Wen differently, you know, and Wen could very well have just been Hilo's love interest, you know. Yeah. Like, and it would have served the story just fine, but it, like, why do that, you know? Like, why not have Wen be much more than she seems and much more capable, mm-hmm. and, you know, have her own personality that, and have Shay not only like come to respect Wen, but respect the relationship that Hilo and Wen have, and like see how they can rub off on each other in a really good way. And
yeah,
that all made a ton of sense. And another conversation that I really, really loved was the one between Shay and the pillar of the Mountain Clan, Eight.
Oh, Ike Jen.
Oh man, that might have been my favorite conversation in the whole book. And the reason for that is because I love it in these kinds of stories when you've kind of got the bad guy, you know, like the antagonist, you know. Mm-hmm. And I really love that point in stories like this where you hear the other side of things. It really fleshes out the intentions behind why that person is doing what they're doing. The Mountain Clan pillar is not just trying to gain power for power's sake necessarily. She has some pretty good reasons for what she's doing. But then that kind of crumbles a little bit too, and she's just like, "Just kill your brother." Like, let's. And Shay's just like, "Holy shit!"
Like, like, are you just like a robot?
Yeah, but her plan is not
her master, right?
Right,
like, but Jen, yeah.
But her plan is not terrible.
No, it's not without reason.
Right, you can't have two captains of a ship.
Right.
You know, I mean, like, if they really want to kind of like usher Jen Loon and Kikon into like this kind of, you know, they can kind of cooperate with these other countries, and, you know, like, they don't want these other countries invading them for their resources and stuff. They have to have control over these substances. It makes sense that this more powerful clan would want to take the control while they can. And I can see how Ait Jen thinks that the No-Pete clan is just kind of in the way of that. And it also makes sense, like, she kind of justifies killing Hilo, like putting the hit out on Hilo. You know, they had to get Hilo out of the way. They never even intended on killing Lan, because Ait Jen thought, like, Lan is reasonable. He'll eventually come to my side and we can figure this out. It's making everything so much more complicated. Not in a bad, confusing way, but in a way where now we're starting to see everybody's intentions here. We're starting to see that this is much more than just this kind of, like, small family clan that is being bullied by this big clan. They're like, there's a lot of moving pieces here. That's very complex, and like, there's a lot of different intentions. I mean, I'm still on the side of the Call family, here, because I really do feel like the Mountain Clan has, even if you completely take out, you know, if you give them that they didn't actually put out a hit on Lan, they still did a bunch of other stuff.
For sure. I mean, they're trying to usurp power from everyone.
Right. Exactly.
They understand, like, Jade, who holds the Jade, controls all of the power on basically this whole continent. Would we call it a continent or an island?
Both. Yeah.
Yeah. And so she's trying to be that person. And then also, you know, she had to do some pretty diabolical things for her rise to power within her own clan, because her being a lady, and I think it's pretty infrequent that women rise to the pillar position. So she had to be like double vicious.
Yeah, she kills like everybody.
Yeah. And then kind of tells Shay, and I think she's almost surprised, because she understands how intelligent Shay is. And so she's kind of like, wait, how are you not arriving to the same conclusion that I am?
Right.
That this is inevitable. And in order for us to come out the victors, these things need to happen. And that's one of those things, is your brother needs to sacrifice himself.
Yeah. And, it's wrong, but it makes sense.
Yeah.
Why she would feel like that. It totally... I wanted to ask you... Because like I was making this comparison while I was reading these books, and I think it's because this happened a lot when I was reading, and I'm bringing up Song of Ice and Fire again, but you know, like reading Song of Ice and Fire and watching Game of Thrones and stuff, one of like the main things in that show and in those books is that a lot of times these conflicts that could be avoided through diplomatic means are escalated due to pride and honor.
Yeah, ego.
There's part of my brain that's like, it's so stupid that so many people have to die just because the pragmatic solution doesn't involve an honorable solution with it. So they're not going to pick it. But then the other half of my brain understands, like Fonda Lee has done a really good job at kind of explaining like why this is all so important to everybody. You know, there was
Like there's things worth dying for.
Right, exactly. And it's like, you know, if you got to believe in something, I think maybe there's something to be said about believing in a bunch of people not dying. I think that maybe like that's something to believe in.
It's
too.
A good goal to have.
But it's just something that I noticed in this book. And I really noticed it when I was reading Song of Ice and Fire and watching Game of Thrones and stuff. And it's just like how much bloodshed could be avoided if people could just put down their egos for a second and like really look at the most pragmatic possible thing. Cause that's kind of the Greenbones' job on paper.
Right. Aisho is all about that.
Yeah. Like their whole job description, you know, but like that's ostensibly the point of the Greenbones, is to make sure that the citizenry is protected. You know, like the economy is running well, there's a good trade going. And I think that each group thinks that that's what they're doing, but honor and ego and pride is getting wrapped up in all of this. And I wouldn't even say necessarily that that's a fault or anything, but as the reader, it's easy to kind of sit back. I'm not actually in this situation, so it's easy to sit back and be like, you know, what would be really cool is if you just let the Mountain Clan do their thing and then nobody has to die.
Right.
But that's not necessarily the way it would shake down either.
Right.
You know, maybe the Mountain Clan would come in and just murder everybody anyway.
Once the No Peak Clan is disarmed, what's to say the Mountain Clan is just not going to come in there and just kill everyone, which is honestly what I think they would do.
Well, I mean, look at what Ai Jen did just to gain some power previously.
Her own clan. Yeah,
right, exactly.
And, you know, yes, you might be able to prevent the now deaths with some of those decisions, but what sort of society are you allowing to be set up and put in place that may cause the deaths of hundreds of thousands of future people? You know, there's always, as with everything, it's always more complicated than you initially think. You're like, oh man, if we could just like smoke a joint in a circle and like hold hands and sing Kumbaya, it'd be all great. And it's like, well, maybe not though.
I think that's kind of one of the cool things about this book. And I hope that it, you know, it continues on and kind of like gets deeper and we expand a little bit more into this idea of like what's best for everybody, because on paper it like what's best for this whole situation is to kind of let the Mountain Clan just roll over everything, you know, but like you said, that could end up being worse for the whole everybody involved, like way worse. But as an observer, and this is just my personal opinion, it feels like the Call family is pretty much just doing this to stay in power. Like, they don't seem to really care that much about the general populace, you know? And I'm not saying the Mountain Clan does, but that's kind of where Barrow comes in my opinion. And, like, I think that's why Barrow is such a key player, so that we as the readers don't forget about the general populace. Like, it doesn't become, you know, that was one of the problems in A Song of Ice and Fire, in my opinion, was like, there's like these families that are killing each other, but there's like hundreds of thousands of people dying, and we never really talk about it. And, yeah. And so it's nice to like kind of dip back in and like see what the common folk are doing.
Yeah.
And kinda, you know, like the Lantern Men, like all that's like really important. Like, we're seeing mm-hmm. how these events are actually affecting the people that aren't necessarily involved in them, like directly right. at least.
I was really glad Hilo didn't make an issue out of the one guy, the Lantern Man, who was head of the restaurant that he always goes to.
Mr. Une?
Yeah, something like that. The guy who makes the really good...
squid balls.
Crunchy squid balls. Yeah.
I wanted some calamari. Yeah. While yeah. I was reading that.
But I kind of thought when I was reading, I was like, oh, is Hilo going to be like, you betrayed the clan, you know? And he doesn't. And I was like, okay, good, good, good.
He cuts off his ear.
Yeah. He cuts off his ear. Like, that's some dedication right there. Yeah. Can you imagine like feeling beholden to someone? You know, if like the president of the United States was like, you betrayed me. There's no way. Cut off my ear, right. Like, forgive me, yeah. Mr. President.
Well, I guess it depends on like what the consequence of not cutting my ear off would be.
Yeah, it feels like I'm right. gonna kill you.
Yeah, your family. I'd cut off my ear.
Yeah, my ear's gone. Yeah,
you still
I'd probably be able to hear things behind me way better. Yeah. What is your prediction as to what's gonna happen with the Andon character?
Okay, so Andon goes to Mirania, right? Like to the Call's mother's house, like Shay and Hilo's mom's house. It was like half a line.
Oh, I didn't even get that.
Yeah, I think that I could be super wrong, but I read that. I think I read
super
that,
right.
I'm pretty sure that's where Andon is. They like drop him off with a couple guards. Okay. He's not in Janloon anymore. So I don't really know. I mean, like that was way out of left field.
Yeah,
and I think it was hinted at a little bit, you know, that Andon was very sensitive to this, and
his mom's history was kind of some foreshadowing.
That's super traumatizing too, because even if that's not exactly what the situation is with Andon, like he'd be fine with it. Mm-hmm. Like I can see why the itches or just him losing control of this would freak him out so much.
Yeah.
Like, obviously. So
and it wasn't even the lack of control, it was the fact that he liked it.
Yeah, he liked it. Yeah.
He liked it. Can you imagine where it being forced to go through something like that and do some of those things, and then at the end of it being, I mean, it says a lot to his character that he was able to be honest enough with himself to be
yeah.
like, I really liked that, you know, because that's like, ugh.
Well, and he doesn't want to be used as a tool. Yeah. Like, he doesn't want to be like a weapon, is what he says to Hilo, which is really cool because, yeah, like that's not what he signed up for.
Yeah, and he kind of has that Bilbo Baggins moment where he sees the ring after he gave it to Frodo a little while later, yeah. And he's like, it's mine! You know? Totally. Like thinking about Hilo's jade, you know, he gets all covetous, and then he's like, whoa, 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 this is not who I want to be.
Yeah, I finished the book not really knowing what was going to go on with Andon. Like, my knee-jerk reaction is kind of that it'll be similar to what happened with Shay, where Shay leaves voluntarily. She decides she doesn't want anything to do with this, but I think that Andon still loves his family and does want to help. So, I mean, I really hope he's in the next couple of books. Like, he's going to be in the next couple of books.
He's got to be.
He's too good of a character. Like, there's no way.
Yeah, he's been developed too much. And the strife, the inner strife that he brings, he's going to be a vehicle for Hilo's growth.
Right. And I was, you know, I was like a little disappointed in Hilo. Not going to lie. Like,
me too.
It was... I mean, I guess within the confines of this whole system, like this whole code that the Greenbones seem to live by, it makes sense that Hilo was that upset about it because it mm-hmm. was, you know, pretty humiliating for him. But like, he's just a kid. Like,
yeah,
he's just, I mean, but Hilo was really young too, but they're different people.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, Andon did a pretty good job. What I really dislike in movies and books sometimes is when one character does something that has a very good explanation, but never gives it fully to the other person. And you're just like, man, with a couple words here, sentences, you could explain yourself and at least the other person would understand why you're doing what you're doing. But he does do that. And he positions himself very well and explains his position to Hilo, I thought, really maturely. And, you know, he could have gone a little bit deeper into the, like, I don't like the person who I'm becoming. I coveted your jade. I'm afraid of the things that I might do and who I'll become if I continue down this road. But he did make his point pretty clear. And Hilo, I was a little disappointed in his reaction, but he is an emotional character, and that's how he cares. You know, like, he kind of had to react that way because he does care.
That is a pretty common trope that a lot of people really dislike, is the miscommunication trope.
Oh.
Yeah, I think that's what you're kind of touching
on, exactly,
right?
That's exactly,
yeah. It bugs a lot of people. It bugs me. Yeah, it's like, or it's like when you're watching a show and you're like, man, if just like one person had a cell phone. And
oh my gosh.
You know what I mean?
Do you ever read The Sword of Truth?
No, I still haven't read those. People ask me about those constantly.
I'm not the greatest fan of them, but there's like hundreds of pages where so much could get resolved if one character can have a 3-minute long conversation with another character and they finally meet. And before they can talk, I don't think this is spoiling anything because I'm not even telling you who the characters are, but before they can talk, they're like, actually, but first I'm going to go take a bath. And you're like, no. And he goes off and takes a bath and like attacks happen and they never get to talk. And you're just like so mad. I had to stop reading.
We just bought ourselves a couple thousand more pages of stuff.
Like two
going
books.
On. Yeah. What do you think is going to be the mountain's reaction to all of this?
Well, I think Ike Jen, that's her name, right? Ike Jen?
Ike Jen. Yeah.
Ike Jen. There we go. Ike Jen is too calculating and strategic to not have a backup plan. Gaunt can't be her only, like, well, I lost my Goliath, so I don't have an army. It's like, no, she's still got power. I bet you she's still in control of a lot of shine. She's probably been wheeling and dealing with the Aspenians, there we go, across the sea. And she's going to bring some unknown about power to bear.
Yeah, I'm pretty interested to see like how quickly into the second book we start seeing kind of the consequences of what's going on here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of trilogies, the second book is usually a little bit of a dip in the action. But I don't know. I don't think this is we're at a point where it would make sense for things to kind of kick off quickly.
Yeah. Here. And something, and I agree with her decision to do this. She didn't talk very much about the fact that there are other clans. The mountain and the No Peak are just the two biggest ones. And it would have been too much information. She did enough in this to have the story be fluid. We didn't really need to know about the other characters, but I think the other clans are going to be some major story points. They're going to come more into focus in the next book or two.
I mean, maybe one starts to kind of rise up in power a little bit and becomes a little bit more of a contender. But maybe that would have been hinted at in this book. I don't know. I have no idea. Because like, if I've learned anything from this book, it's that I really can't predict
what's
going to happen, but that's my favorite. I love that so much. As sad as I was to see Lan die, I was also so excited just to see what would happen.
Yeah.
Just to see what everybody's reaction was going to be.
And it gives you like an uncertainty and you're like, whoa, okay. First off, Fonda got some cojones on her and now she's an unknown element. I don't know what she's going to do. Nobody's safe.
That's a good way of putting it. But I don't know if anybody like major is going to die in the next book or anything. Because we've only got now we're down a very important critical character. I mean, are we just going to have two main characters in the third book? Like, I don't know.
Man, everyone's licking their wounds. That's why I think there's some other clans are going to come into preeminence. That's what I'm looking for.
It's preeminence.
Is it preeminence? Thank you. I think some other clans are going to come into to preeminence. And
that's not a word.
Is it what did you just say?
I said preeminence.
That's not a word?
I just made it up. Yeah.
Oh, what the hell?
It's not preeminence.
It's focus, but I already said focus, so I don't say it again. They're going to come into the main vision of the reader.
Crushing it.
Yeah. I read a lot.
Oh, I do want to bring something up. You know, I was just talking about how I couldn't predict anything. I did predict one thing, and it was that Doru was going to escape. Yeah, because of course he's going to. Because
of course.
I mean,
he's like wheeling and dealing weatherman, old and shasty.
Yeah, like right when Shay did that, I remember thinking, no, that's not a good idea. Yeah. But to heap even more praise on Fonda Lee's character development, I think it was a really good idea to have Shay not be on top of everything. You know, I mean, she was thinking with her heart, not with her brain right there. And there was really no real benefit to making sure that her grandfather was comfortable other than just
it was a nice
that
thing
that she loved him, which is fine. But Carl Sen was already at the funeral and everybody got to see that he was not top notch. He's not doing very good. And that was good for Hilo, for everyone to see that Hilo is basically the only option for Pillar at this point. So yeah, it's not going to make Carl Sen look any better. And even if it did make Carl Sen look better, it'd be bad for Hilo. So like, I just knew that, I mean, that was like the one thing I predicted, but I don't think it was supposed to be this big surprise that Daru got out.
I'm going to make a prediction on top of your prediction, because while it did not have any immediate effect in the positive beyond her, you know, sleeping a little better at night, knowing her grandpa has a friend, I think, like with many acts of goodness, it's going to come back in a positive way in
right.
the end. It already did a little bit in the fact that she got a letter warning her. You know, it was an excellent line. It was a very like old proverb type line, you know, of like a mountain is hard to be pushed into the ocean or something. So she gets a warning, but I think it's going to come back even in a bigger way, that she is going to, that act of kindness will be repaid to her.
Like maybe Doru will redeem himself.
Yeah.
Maybe it'll take Carl Sen dying or something.
Yeah, he needs to die. He needs to go, that guy.
I couldn't do anything about this, but I kept picturing him as the old grandpa in Breaking Bad, the guy with the bell. Is that just me?
No, dude. I mean, I didn't think of him, but I see where you
now you're going to. That.
Yeah, I will every time.
And now everyone else listening. Yeah, just kind of that same kind of like really grumpy old man.
So selfish.
Like, yeah, this kind of gave me like that same vibe.
Yeah, I can see why he gave you that vibe.
Maybe we'll hit on one more point and then get out of here.
Okay, let's see here. Mine's more of an observation, not a question. I'll just say, what did you think? So what did you think of Hilo kind of coming into his ability to like negotiate in the council meeting?
Did he negotiate? I mean, I guess he did. Well, like he had a lot of leverage there.
Yeah. And he, what did he say? He gets her riled up. He kind of gets her emotional. Jen, he accuses her of stealing Jade and then getting the local gangsters addicted to it.
Right. And they have a recording. That was like the clincher there.
That right from Tenben.
Yeah, exactly. And I did like that Shay didn't really know what was going on. So Shay was just like, what the hell are you doing? Like, we were supposed to do this in a couple days. You're doing this like way too early. I mean, I felt bad for Hilo because, you know, in true false negotiations fashion, like Jen was kind of like, they're the aggressors here and I have my receipts, you know, like they did this and this and this. And then meanwhile, Hilo's just like, yeah, well, we only did that because you did this. But see, that's kind of the nature of this whole situation and kind of like alluding to like what I was talking about before, where it's like, there's not really a line in the sand here. Like there's no real kind of like both sides have just been awful to each other.
Right. They've lost focus on their goal.
Yeah, I mean, that whole scene was very, it felt pointless, but not from my like standpoint as a reader. It was pointless for everybody involved. And that was why that chapter was called like a shared joke or whatever, is because both pillars know, you know, it was all for show. Like, you know, and like obviously, but it had to happen. I mean, like any kind of governmental body is going to try to reconcile these differences so that they can save money and lives, but you know, they both walked in there and it wasn't going to happen at all. So I think Hilo did a really good job at like keeping his head when he was being accused of things that he didn't necessarily feel like were all his fault, because he knew if he flies off the handle in here, it's only going to make her look stronger.
Right.
So yeah, like to your question, yeah, I think he did a really good job.
Also in his conversation with Chancellor Sun, because he realized, he tries to do the lawn thing and then realizes like, this isn't my game. You know what, man, he just is super straight with him. We both don't like each other, but you need me and I need you. So let's just work together and hate each other and call it a day.
That was a really cool conversation.
It was. Before we go, and I know I touched on this a little bit earlier, but I just kind of want to flesh the thought out a little bit more. We've talked about characters progressing and evolving, and I really liked how Barrow's character, in addition to everyone else, is also progressing, and he becomes a little bit more calculating and forward thinking, where the final scene of the book, he's with young Mutt in the graveyard, and he goes to Lan's grave, and he's just kind of like, I know Jade's here. And I don't think, did you get the impression that he was going to dig it up right then? Because I didn't.
So like the last words of that chapter,
he says, don't wreck anything, Mutt, because we don't want them to start guarding the place, implying later I'm going to come back and get this Jade.
The impression that I got was that he was going to come back for more later. I could be like complete. Well, because he's storing a bunch of SN1, right? So he's got like a little treasure trove of SN1. So like my impression, and I could be completely wrong here, but my impression was like when he told Mutt that, he was kind of like, let's get in here, let's grab a little bit and then like bury it again and then jet out of here and we can come back and get some more. Because I don't think that they were, I don't think he wanted to be there all night digging all of his, you know, because he would have to dig up so much. I don't know, but I mean, I could be wrong, but I do think that they were digging up his jade
that night. Okay, I kind of got the impression that he was just checking it out to see what, and then on a more calculated night, he was going to come in and do it, because Mutt starts like kicking things over and he's like, do you want them to start guarding this place? You know, and I kind of thought he was just like reveling in his own plans, you know, which I thought was cool evolution.
See, that's why I thought they were going to come back for more later, was they are, do you want them to start guarding this place line? Because like, if they take it all now, it wouldn't matter if they were guarding it later.
Right.
So that's, I mean, that's the impression that I got, but maybe we're both wrong. But
who knows?
I mean, the most likely thing is that they just dig it all up.
And he's going to fill a power gap, I think, because he's going to become not only the underground shine guy, but also he's going to have a ton of jade. So I think he's going to become the underground, the new carver.
I don't know what's going to happen with Barrow. Yeah, I wasn't expecting the last chapter of the book to be him.
He's an interesting element of this story. He's a different player.
All right. Well, that's going to conclude our coverage of Jade City, the first book in the Greenbone saga. And I'm so excited to get to the next couple of these.
Me too. I haven't read the second or third one, and I'm very excited to see what happens.
Yeah, it's all surprises for both of us from here on out. Thank you so much, everybody, for listening in on this and for reading along. And this has been a blast for both Chad and myself, and we're really happy to have you here. And if you'd like to support Book Reviews Kill, you can go ahead and click on the Patreon link in the description on this episode and join the conversation on our Discord. There's a link to the Discord in this episode as well, and we have a Greenbone thread in the Discord as well.
There's also a link to a 30-day Audible premium subscription that comes with 2 free credits in the link below. So if you want to help us out and get yourself some free credits, go ahead and check that out. And we really appreciate your time.
Looking forward to reading this second book with you, Chad, and with everybody listening. Hope you all have an excellent rest of your day.
Bye, everybody. Book one down.